So we light these candles because we've entered the season of divine light. And then when we do this, we are recognizing that this great light is streaming from that mystical beyond that we are summoning forth, as well as the light that is within us that we are igniting once again. So when we do this in our homes, when we do this in our spiritual communities, we are welcoming that light. We are saying, come near, come through us, shine as us, bring more of you into the world. And the good news is, because people all around the world are lighting candles and lights this time of year, the divine light is amplified. And whenever we do it with this kind of consciousness, that makes a big difference too, doesn't it? The sacred is found not just when we light Advent candles or menorahs, but it's also found when we light any kind of lights. So if you're in the midst of lighting your Christmas tree or putting lights out on your house or your bushes or lighting candles inside, you can know that this too is sacred. This too is infused with the divine. That we are all, we can remember when we're doing this, that we are connecting with an ancient spiritual practice that has been around for thousands and thousands of years, ever since we found fire. So many years ago, spirit took over while I was decorating at home. I was just, you know, it was like, you know how sometimes your actions are just led and you're not really thinking about it? You're just in that flow, right? So I was in that flow and I was creating these little spaces around my house, and I didn't really know what I was doing until I was finished and looked around and realized I had created a bunch of mini altars around my home. And when friends came over that Christmas, it was like as soon as they walked in, they would go directly to those spaces. And it wasn't so much because of the objects that were there, but because the spaces were infused with the sacred. It's the consciousness with which we do anything, right, that moves it from being mundane to sacred. We can do anything, wash the dishes, brush our teeth, with a sense of sacredness, with a sense of gratitude, with a sense of love, with a sense of service, and it will be infused with that sense of sacred. It will shift into that space. So by just bringing consciousness, decorating becomes ritual, and decor becomes an altar. We never really have to do that much, you know? We always think this thing is so hard, this spiritual journey. Do you ever feel like that? Like, oh, you know, I don't meditate enough, or I don't, you know, do this or that, and we kind of, you know, beat ourselves up. It's not hard. This is not hard. For us to just bring into our everyday lives, to welcome the sacred into our everyday lives, to make of our actions in the world a ritual, to make of our conversations something that is shrouded in kindness. That's the path of the divine light. That's the path that faith can help us bring into fruition. So as you may know, that today and the next three Sundays are what we call Advent. This is the four Sundays before Christmas. And it's all about preparing for the journey. It is the journey, and it's the preparation, the preparatory journey that brings us to the rebirth, right, of the Christ or the divine in us, the full recognition of this light. So each of the Sundays is marked by a theme, faith this week, and then peace and love and joy. And it's really handy that Hanukkah also is able to be woven in as it begins tonight. And over these 8 days, the themes of faith and peace really work well with the Jewish tradition too. So thank you, David and Louise, for bringing this in, and Lisa for the song, and later you're going to hear a story that Lisa also shared with me. So it's really lovely to be able to hold traditions together, isn't it? So we begin this journey, obviously, by bolstering our faith. That's our focus. And for those of you who are familiar with traditional Advent themes, you might be wondering, what happened to hope? Well, she's sitting right there. Yeah. But we do need hope, don't we, as humans? We definitely need hope. Faith, though, is stronger and more effective. Now, of course, I'm not talking about hope, the person. But as we move into this idea of faith, it makes us recognize that faith will see us through. Hope will help us survive. Faith will help us thrive. Somebody once said, hope is faith that hasn't yet said its prayers. So if you've noticed before that when your hope shifts to faith, fear falls away. Anybody noticed that before? When we make that leap from hope to faith, any fear gets shaken out there, and we begin to recognize and feel the truth in us. So the season of Advent really belongs to Mary, but it's important to note that Mary doesn't belong just to Christianity. Mary really belongs to all religions, but particularly she was a devout Jew, so Mary herself is Jewish. And the Quran, the Holy Quran, actually refers to Mary a lot more than the Bible does. So these Abrahamic traditions for sure embrace Mary. So I want to invite us into stepping into Mary's sandals for a moment, because the story of who Mary is a bit of the story, of course, of who we are. Now you, as Mary, are born to loving parents, and your parents notice very early on that you are very spiritually attuned. And they wonder what they can do best for you to serve you, and they decide that the best thing is for you to be raised in the temple. And so at about 3 years old, you move into the temple, and it's there that you'll be raised. And your life in the temple is filled with prayer and religious ritual, and your love for God is bigger than your love for anyone or anything else over the years. When you become a young woman, you are engaged to be married. And there is fear in your heart to leave the shelter of your temple home, to go and be with this older man in marriage, and to go out into the world. And so it's in this place, one day, during this time of uncertainty, that you're knitting together some of the fabric of the temple when a bright light appears. And then a form fills out, and it is the angel Gabriel. And out of this angelic light streams first these comforting words, "Be not afraid." And it helps calm you a little bit. But then the words that follow aren't so comforting. They're more of a charge. And they go like this. "You're pregnant, Mary." Now at this point you say, "Wait, what?" And you let it sink in a little bit more, and the angel says it a different way. "You're with child, Mary." And goes on to tell you then something about this child. That this child will break open the veil of the world's consciousness to a whole different level of understanding. This child that you're going to bear. And this child you will love as much as you love God. Well, there, Mary's heart really swells. The idea that as much as she loves God, that she will have a child that she can hold in her arms, that she will love just as much. Now the angels really got her. And the angel continues to say how this child, though, will not belong to you. The child belongs to God, and for some time the child will belong to the people. And Mary gets that sinking feeling in her heart that the life of this child won't be long. So it is with all of that then that the light begins to recede and Mary is left alone in the temple with her knitting to think about that this very fabric that she is weaving now might be rent in two at some point by the breakthrough of this consciousness, by the life and death of her beloved child. All this she doesn't know yet, but with this incredible and frightening news that you have just received as Mary, you muster all that faith that you have banked for so many years of prayer, and you let that divine love stir in your heart to sanctify this experience, to strengthen you. And maybe still shaking from the angel's presence and prophecy, perhaps even with tears streaming down your cheeks, you say, I accept. I accept that call. Now I want to invite you to step out of Mary's shoes and into your own. And if you wish to close your eyes for a moment and to imagine now to allow to come forth the streaming light to come streaming from the heavens and down through your crown and to become apparent right here within you in your mind's eye. Maybe you'll see form, maybe you'll see an angel, maybe you'll just see light. Feeling the warmth now of the light that is wise and kind and loving. And opening your heart now to receive, what is your charge? What is it that you are being asked to do? You might hear an answer or see something revealed to you now. Let's simply ask and listen and look and receive in the silence. What is this charge, this calling? What is it that you are being asked to do? Maybe just a next step. And if you accept this calling, say yes in your heart or maybe even out loud in the support of your spiritual community. Yes. When you're ready, you can give thanks to the light. Come back into this space where the light never leaves. And if you received an answer today, know this, that you can do this. With God, anything is possible. And if you keep the faith burning, that through the ember of prayer, you can keep this idea alive that you have received today. If you haven't received anything, that's okay too. It may be coming at a later date, divine timing. Know that you can open your heart at any time and receive. Matthew 7:7 says, ask and it will be given you. A man named Chaim shows us how to do this. Because sometimes we're not even sure how to ask. And so it is in this Hanukkah folktale that we learn. It's called A Letter on the Wind, a Hanukkah tale. So I invite you to find the child within you. to gather around and listen to the story. Once in a far-off village, there nearly was a year without Hanukkah. That year, the rain was a stranger. The parched earth grew only dust, so the olives shrank and withered on the trees. Without olives, the villagers could not make olive oil to light their menorahs. "What can we do?" the villagers sighed. "Hanukkah is fast approaching, and we have nothing, no olives, no olive oil, no Hanukkah." One man, Chaim, the poorest in the village, said to himself, "We cannot have a year without Hanukkah. We must light the menorahs and remember the long-ago miracle. I will ask the Almighty for help." Chaim went to the marketplace, straight to the scribe, and begged him to write a letter. "Chaim," scoffed the scribe, "to whom will you write? You know no one beyond this village." Next slide. "I will write to the Almighty," Chaim replied. "We cannot have a year without Hanukkah." "The Almighty?" the villagers gasped. Some laughed. "Huh," one said, "foolish Chaim." Yet the scribe slipped a quill from his sleeve and dipped in the ink, then poised it above the parchment. "Almighty," Chaim began, "you know that Hanukkah is coming, but you see the olives hang withered in the trees. So we have no oil to light the menorahs. I beg you, send us oil enough for the entire village. Thank you, your humble servant, Chaim." "Will you address it to the Almighty in heaven?" Chaim asked. The scribe blew out his breath, rolled his eyes. But the quill sped over the parchment, and he handed the scroll to Chaim. Next slide. Chaim followed the path beyond the village and then climbed the highest hill, and there he sat waiting for the wind. He waited and he waited. A soft breeze ruffled his hair. "It's not strong enough," thought Chaim. A quick wind swirled a patch of dust in front of him, but it died, and Chaim waited. At last a strong wind came, steady and straight. "If you please," said Chaim, and he offered his letter for the Almighty. The wind caught the parchment and lifted it higher and higher in the air, above the hills, beyond the mountains, until it was but a speck, and then no more. Next slide. Chaim walked back to his village. The wind carried the letter past the wings of the birds, through the clear air and clouds, to a far-off city, where it skimmed the spires and rooftops and landed finally at the feet of a merchant, looking out from his balcony. The merchant picked up the letter and read it. "Ah," he murmured in reply, "the Almighty has chosen me to do this deed." Immediately, the merchant ordered his servant to load 15 camels with the choicest supplies, vats and vessels of the purest oil, baskets of the freshest figs and dates, flour and sugar for a year, and a silver menorah, a glitter with jewels. Next slide. "Follow the camels and see where they lead," he bade his servant, knowing the Almighty would show them the way. "Then quickly unload them and wait for no thanks." The servant followed the camels over mountains and hills and through desert valleys, a steady wind pushing them toward Chaim's hut. They arrived in the darkness at just the right time. The next night was the first night of Hanukkah. Chaim woke at dawn and opened his door. "The Almighty has answered my letter," he cried. "There is enough oil for the entire village." As morning grew brighter, Chaim went to the marketplace and called to the villagers sitting out of the sun. "Come to my hut this very evening. Bring a pot or a bowl, a trough or a basin. Tonight we will celebrate Hanukkah." Next slide. "Foolish Chaim," the villagers murmured one to another. But that evening they crowded Chaim's hut, their eyes drawn to his crumbling sill. There sat a splendid menorah, glittery, silver, and studded with jewels, beside the clay one Chaim's father had given him. Chaim lit the menorah's wicks floating in oil. A miracle, the villagers exclaimed. It's a gift from the Almighty, said Chaim. Then Chaim filled the villagers' pots and their bowls, their troughs and their basins with oil, flour, and sugar, with figs and with dates. Happy Hanukkah, Chaim cried. Happy Hanukkah, sang the villagers, dancing out into the night. Next slide. The scribe, the last to leave, paused at Chaim's door and gazed at the new menorah. It's so beautiful, he whispered. Why don't you stay, Chaim asked. We will sing. The scribe only bent closer, studying the new menorah. He gasped and straightened quickly, then bent to look again. Why, a man's name is etched in the base, he cried. It's Ger Yehuda, the merchant known far and wide. And then the scribe whispered, is Chaim a thief? Chaim heard his whisper. The menorah is a gift from the Almighty, he said. But his words fell on nothing. The door, left wide open, let in only the night. Next slide. Does he think I'm a thief? Chaim wondered. Slowly, he walked from his hut, following the path beyond the village, and then he climbed the highest hill. Alone, he sat, wondering, worrying. Below him in the darkness, he saw the tiny lights of his menorah flickering. A little way off, two more lights flickered, then four, then eight, then 20. More and more until Chaim saw that all the houses in the village were lit by their menorahs. Oil enough, he thought. It is a gift from the Almighty. And he smiled despite his worry. The wind gathered around him, brushing his cheek, skimming his brow. And at that very moment, the scribe sat at his writing desk, writing to the merchant. I saw your menorah with my own eyes. It sits in the poor man Chaim's hut. Is our Chaim a thief? Next slide. In the morning, the scribe gave the letter to some travelers who were journeying through the city. And on the second night of Hanukkah, and on the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth, Chaim lit his two menorahs, then climbed the highest hill. And below him in the darkness, he saw the tiny lights of the menorahs flickering in all the houses throughout the village, lit by their menorahs, each night more brilliant than the night before. Oil enough, thought Chaim, but he worried. Does the scribe still think I'm a thief? On the seventh night of Hanukkah, Chaim climbed the highest hill, and below him he saw the tiny lights of his menorahs flickering. All else lay in darkness. Next slide. What has happened? Chaim cried. He paced his hut that night until the earliest morning, and then he hurried to the marketplace and called the villagers gathering to sell their meager wares. Is there not oil enough? A villager glanced at the scribe and then said, the oil is stolen. We will not use it, said another. The scribe pointed his finger at Chaim and said, thief! At that very moment, the travelers reached the city as if someone strong was pushing us, they reported. They hurried to the merchant, who read the scribe's letter with trembling hands. Next slide. No harm must come to that faithful fellow, he vowed. The merchant called for his horse, and off he rode swiftly, the air gusting behind him over the mountains and the hills, through the desert valleys, until he came to Chaim's hut. I am a stranger in your village, he said, when Chaim answered the door, but I have nowhere to celebrate Hanukkah. Come, Chaim said, though he did not know him. It is the last night of Hanukkah. We must light the menorahs. And he led the merchant to his crumbling sill. This one is unusual, said the merchant, pointing to the new menorah. Where is it from? Next slide. Will he too call me a thief? Chaim wondered. His voice barely a whisper, he answered. It is a gift from the Almighty. The merchant nodded. Chaim's voice grew stronger. A man's name is etched in the base. Why? I do not know. Then Haim bade the merchant light the new menorah while he lit his father's made of clay. 9 lights blazed on each menorah for the 8 nights of Hanukkah and for the Shamash watching over. Haim and the merchant blessed the flaming wicks. Then they sang Hanukkah songs in harmony far into the night. When yawning stopped their singing, Haim said to the merchant, "There's something I must tell you. The villagers call me a thief." "Is it so?" asked the merchant. Haim shook his head. That night, Haim slept more sweetly than he had ever slept before. Next slide. In the morning, the merchant said to him, "Let us go to the marketplace and sit among the villagers." Haim's face paled. The merchant laid his hand on Haim's shoulder, and Haim followed as he would have with his own father. Haim and the merchant stood together in the marketplace. "Such fine robes on the stranger," the villagers murmured. "How his jewels shimmer in the sun." "It is Ger Yehuda," cried the scribe, "the merchant known far and wide. It is his menorah that Haim stole." Haim, his eyes wide, turned to the merchant, and the merchant said to Haim, "My name is etched on the menorah's base, but the Almighty had me do it." "Send it. It is a gift from the Almighty," said Haim. Next slide. A tiny breeze riffled through the air, and no one spoke. The scribe blushed red. A villager broke the silence. "Our Haim is a man of faith," he said, and the others echoed, "Haim." From that time on in the village, there was never a year without Hanukkah. The rain was a friend, the olive trees blossomed, and there was oil enough to light the menorahs. And every year at Hanukkah, the merchant came to Haim. Together they lit the menorahs, the one jeweled and silver, and the old one made of clay. And then they sang Hanukkah songs in harmony far into the night. And the wind, as though it had heard them, danced through the olive trees. So many lessons on faith in Haim's story as we begin to unpack it and see how his prayers of faith, how strong he was, how unwavering he was in his belief. And his prayers were for the greater good, for abundant good for all. They weren't just for himself. His prayers were generous. He teaches us not to listen to the naysayers, even though he worried a bit. He didn't let that affect his belief that the gift had come from God himself or herself or itself or theyself, themself. Did I cover it all? He showed us how to trust what knowing in our hearts, right? To trust it, to follow, to act accordingly. If you aren't sure of that voice within, of, you know, which voice is it, some say, when we're first learning, think of what Mary Manning Morrissey offers to us. She says, when a friend, a dear friend, or a close family member calls and they say hi, you recognize their voice immediately, don't you? And why is that? Because we have spent years developing a relationship. We have committed to that relationship. We have gotten to know the other. We have spent time together, quality time. There is a love that binds us. And so it is the same for us. If we want to know the voice of Spirit, we just need to invest a little time in building that relationship so we can hear that voice, so we can recognize it from the first hello. Ah, there's that familiar voice. There's the one I want to listen to. That's the one that will guide me further into the light. That voice becomes familiar, and it becomes one that we can find comfort in. It becomes a voice that is trustworthy. So as Haim in the story, every night, he would climb up to the highest hills, right? And that's actually throughout the scriptures, this is also a metaphor for whenever somebody goes up the mountain, it's about going up higher in consciousness. And so we go up higher in our consciousness and we look out, and it is from that vantage point of an elevated consciousness that we can see the divine light, like Chaim was able to see all the lights within the people's homes, right? We can see the light within each other more clearly when we have gone to that higher ground within ourselves. So when we're down here in the low spaces of conflict and judgment and, you know, he said, she said, wrong, right, all that stuff, we can then lift ourselves up to a higher place and we can see the divine in each other. We can see the divine in ourselves and throughout our world and different situations. Chaim never stopped believing, even though everyone around him was doubting him, doubting God, doubting the possibilities, saying he was foolish. Sometimes it takes that kind of risk when we are called to do something, whatever you might have been called to do this morning or in the coming days. Know that it might involve some risk. It certainly will involve naysayers, and usually the biggest naysayers live up here, right? The doubters and the naysayers, anybody have a committee like that? Yeah. So it's quieting those when we come to that higher space within ourselves. And Chaim's faith then brought gifts, because it always does. When we say yes, it's not about just hard things to do. It's about the blessings that flow because we have been guided. In Chaim's case, it was abundance for all, right? And it was spiritual friendship. He would have never met that merchant otherwise, and they had this beautiful spiritual friendship, this solid connection based on their joint faith. So whatever your desired blessing is, you can claim it. Claim it with prayer. Give it off, you know, offer it up to the winds. Write it down. Speak it. Share it with somebody. Literally, maybe give it off out into the winds in some way, in some kind of ritual that feels right for you. And when the divine calls you, like in Mary's case, let your faith help you stay open. Let your faith guide you one step at a time to say, I'm open to receive. Because every one of our souls, you know, has a unique calling, a unique way of contributing to the world. You don't have to necessarily wait for the big revelatory one. It can be something simple, something to do today or tomorrow or next week. But it's that willingness to stay open that allows us to receive, and then a willingness to say yes, to trust, to walk that path of faith. As we light our candles and our wreaths and our Christmas trees and whatever else you might light up during this season of light, let's do it, recognizing that we are ushering in more divine light into our world, that we are remembering who we are, and that we are shining that light out into the world. So it's not just the warmth and the beauty of the season that we behold when we see the lights, but a recognition that the many thousands, millions of lights around the world are being amplified at the same time. There is an ushering in, a welcoming in, a claiming, an invitation for more of the divine light to be shed upon us and to arise within us. So let's not forget, I hope you won't forget, that you individually light up the world with your faith. And if every one of us is brave enough to follow the faith within us, and keep that light, well, imagine what we can do. So let's know this truth together, that we light the world up with our faith. Together, I light up the world with my faith. And so it is.